This is Jim Taylor back on WRMJ and WRMJ.com. I had heard there was a Quidditch match in Stronghurst, Illinois, and I also heard there is a class down at Monmouth College that's learning about Harry Potter. Anne Mayberry down at Monmouth College. Are these things I hear true?
They are. And we have not even used Veritas serum. I'm more than happy to tell you that both of those things are true. The fun part is taking the college juniors from the Harry Potter class over to Stronghurst to the middle school, and when we walk through the door, everybody is 11 immediately, and it is so much fun.
Well, tell us how that was set up. We're going to get into the actual class and the learning and how Harry Potter, the lessons from that series can be applied in the college classroom setting. But tell us a little bit about how a group of kids from Monmouth College and a group of kids from West Central Middle School in Stronghurst, Illinois, got together and played a Quidditch match. And Quidditch is a sport that is played in the Harry Potter series. So first tell us about that.
So in the Harry Potter series, if you're a magical person, you get to play this game on broomsticks. So it's actually flying around above the stadium. And there are balls that have to go through hoops at either end, and you get points for that. There are also people who are throwing another kind of ball called a bludger. They're trying to knock you off your broomstick. And remember, you're soaring around above the field. And you get 150 points for catching a tiny golden ball called the Snitch that has wings and it flies around. So we are muggles, which is the word for non-magical people in Harry Potter world. So we have to play on the ground.
So tell us then, so West Central Middle School had a team, and I believe West Central Middle School, the connection is their teacher is a Monmouth College grad, so that was the connection. So can you tell us the backstory about how this game or how this match got set up?
Yeah, so Tammy Rankin is the middle school science teacher, and she has a club there called Dumbledore's Academy. So in the books, there's a group called Dumbledore's Army, and they figured they couldn't have an army in the middle school, so they have Dumbledore's Academy. So Tammy's husband, Doug Rankin, is also a colleague of mine at Monmouth, so that's how I met Tammy. And we have been getting our students together for years. Often they come to the college, and we have done dueling competitions, and we've made potions, and we always eat way too many chocolate frogs and cockroach clusters and cauldron cakes. These are treats from Harry Potter world. So twice now my students have gone out to the middle school, and this time they have been working on playing Quidditch. They issued us a challenge by video, and at first my students were very concerned about playing hard against a bunch of 6th, 7th, and 8th graders. The video challenge was so fierce, all bets were off. And they went there, we were going to whoop them, and we did.
All right, and so let's back up, and because I wanted to make sure that I got that story in about the Quidditch match, but you're a philosophy professor, and I think this is a junior-level reflections course down at Monmouth College, which is part of the college's integrated studies curriculum. So a little bit about how you apply this Harry Potter's series in a classroom setting. And what can be, I guess, what lessons can be learned? Or the question is why, I guess.
My students have grown up with Harry Potter, and I confess that I was skeptical. So I was in my 30s when I picked up the first book, and mostly I was doing it just to see what is all the fuss about. And so I have the first three books in paperback, and you can tell when I started lining up at Barnes & Noble at midnight with a bunch of teenagers wearing wizarding robes to get the fourth book. So all of four, or five, six, and seven I have in hardcover. So what I realized when I picked the book up just to see what it was all about was that it works on very many levels. So I can see why kids love them. They're full of adventure. They're full of, you know, magical games like Quidditch that you play on broomsticks and chocolate frogs and cockroach clusters. And but they also work, I think, for adults, because we're learning all kinds of stuff in these books about what does it mean to be a good friend and how do you live the best possible life you can, both as an individual but also as part of a community. So I think that there are moral lessons woven throughout, but they don't do it in a way that hits you over the head with it. I mean, it really invites you to engage your imagination. And I think stories really matter. I mean, human beings have been telling stories and myths for as long as we have been around. And part of it is to try and figure out, what the heck are we doing here? How do we get along? How do we live together? What's the best way to engage with non-human creatures? So the books ask us to ask those questions without being really heavy-handed. So it occurred to me that, I mean, even though I teach in the philosophy department, as you mentioned, we have a 4-year integrated studies program, which is supposed to be interdisciplinary. So the juniors pick a course from a group of classes under the umbrella of reflections, which are supposed to encourage people to reflect on their own lives and to think about what values matter to them. So it just seemed to me that this book series was a perfect way to engage students who are studying in all kinds of majors. And I think that also those different disciplinary interests bring a huge wealth of background knowledge to the series. So each student can see things that other students might not have seen, and together it can be really magical.
Well, it's interesting, when I read the press release from Monmouth College, you were a chemistry major growing up. So the question is, how does one get from chemistry to philosophy? And I would say part of the journey is maybe a little bit through Harry Potter, right?
I got my PhD well before Harry Potter was even published. But looking back on my life through the lens of Harry Potter, I realized that probably what attracted me to chemistry was that I really wanted to be an alchemist. And J.K. Rowling herself, in an interview in a Scottish newspaper, said that she never wanted to be a witch, but an alchemist, that was another story. And she said she studied alchemy a lot before she wrote the books, and alchemy is the sort of underlying logic that holds the series together. So she had to know what works and what doesn't work in the magical world to tell a coherent tale. So I think what attracted me to chemistry was the idea of changing something into something else. And so the course is called Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Soul, and this is more a play on the British title of the first novel, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, rather than a disciplinary thing. So the Philosopher's Stone was the thing that the alchemists were trying to create, and it was supposed to make an elixir that could turn base metals into gold and grant the drinker immortal life. But the bit of study that I've done about alchemy, and this is something that I think happened for me a little bit in the chemistry lab, was thinking about something immortal and something golden in the physical, earthly world, but also in every alchemist. So as you're trying to transform, doing your metallurgical process, you're also transforming yourself and finding something golden and eternal in a regular old mortal human life. So that's a little bit of my story from chemistry to philosophy. And it seems as if if I had read Harry Potter when I was 20, it might have made sense to have that progression happen. But since I read it after I was already in philosophy, looking back, it sort of maybe explains my attraction to the books. I think one of the jobs of a philosopher is to try to see the culture through maybe an unusual set of lenses. So not just to repeat what's there in the culture, but to say what's good about it, what's bad about it, how can we transform it? And that's kind of an alchemical process.
And as we wrap up here, again, talking with Anne Maymary down at Monmouth College, using Harry Potter in a college course setting, what has kind of been the reaction from the kids that take the class as you watch them? You know, we're talking about an age group, really. They've grown up with the series, so I'm sure they're pretty excited about embracing it. So what has been the reaction from the students down there?
I've been teaching this course now. I've taught it 9 times, and I always think I'm going to be bored. I'm tired of reading Harry Potter. But then I get these 18 to 20 college juniors, and they see things that I never would have seen. Right, so they come into the class excited about it, and one wonderful thing is that they're readers. They learn to read because of Harry Potter. But they also, and this is my first objective on my syllabus, is to maintain the joy in reading this series, because I don't want it to turn into an academic exercise that makes it dull or boring for them. So we're always keeping the joy in the series in front of us, and that's they bring that joy to the class. But one thing we realize is, yes, they grew up with Harry Potter, but now as college juniors, they realize the series has grown up with them. And part of our assignment is to look for some of the background information. So what's the mythological reference say behind the character's name? And when they find those things, it just makes the series more magical for them. And it's just such a privilege for me to be part of that conversation with them.
All right. Well, it's been great to visit with Monmouth College philosophy professor Anne Mayberry, doing a great job. They play Quidditch, man, down in Stronghurst, Illinois. That's awesome. And a class in the Harry Potter series down at Monmouth College. Thank you for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it, too.
You're listening to WRMJ and WRMJ.com.